Is your microphone one?
I'm calling the October.
Committee meeting to order.
Now is the roll call.
Chair Brennan.
Here.
Committee Member Copeland.
Here.
Committee Member Hatchett. Committee Member McClooney. Committee Member Smith. Committee Member Storm. Vice. No, you're next.
Smith.
Vice Chair Stroh. Are you here? Committee Member Swint. Committee Member Turley. We have quorum today.
Very good. Thank you. Any changes to the agenda? Now's the time for comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Are there any comments from the public?
Nothing received.
First action is to accept and file the summary of actions of the October or the April 4th, 2024 meeting. We didn't have a quorum at the last meeting, so we are ready to accept any comments on that. We don't need a motion. If see no comments, we will accept those. Accept and file a summary of actions of the August 1 meeting. Any comments on that? See none, we will accept those. The next item is to receive a presentation on the motor vehicle emission reduction grant using AB 2766 and provide comments and recommendations to the board.
Does this sound good? Good afternoon, members. Good afternoon, members of the advisory committee. My name is Eli Lessman. I'm an air quality planner. I'm presenting information about the AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emission Reduction Program, including staff recommendations for project funding. Assembly Bill 2766 provides a revenue stream for programs to reduce air pollution from motor vehicles and for various functions to implement the California Clean Air Act. Here, MBARD receives $4 per DMV vehicle registration in the Tri-County area. Funds are then allocated based on populations in the Tri-County area. Next, I'll cover our current programs. The Clean Vehicle Program funds light, medium, and heavy-duty clean vehicles. Light-duty incentives are $20,000 for new vehicles and $15,000 for used. Medium and heavy-duty vehicle incentives have a maximum award of $200,000. The Clean Air Management Program is for public agencies to develop transportation and electrification infrastructure. The maximum award offered is $200,000, and all projects are ranked using the latest methodology. Here's a breakdown of the program budget and applications submitted. While the budget's $1.2 million, the sum requested by all three counties was $2.5 million. Monterey County and San Benito County requested more than their population-based funding targets. Santa Cruz County did not. The values in the far right column represent a recommended sum of funding for different potential projects in each county. Over the past several years, San Benito County has had zero to a few small projects. Funds San Benito did not use brought benefits to communities in Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. Though the population-based funding target for San Benito County is approximately 106,000, Mindful of funding activity over past years, staff recommend allocating $360,000. Here you can see three tables, recommended project funding per county, Monterey County in blue, San Benito green, and Santa Cruz in red. This cycle, there were 22 applications. What we've done here is distributed the funds broadly while maintaining cost effectiveness. And next we'll go into the cycle in detail project by project. This is the Monterey County project. It'll help fund a street cleaner for the San Lucas community and reduce road dust in that low-income area. The request was $200,000. Staff recommend $200,000. This is the University of California Santa Cruz project. It's a shuttle bus replacement. The request was $200,000 and staff recommend $100,000. This is the Sunny Slope Water District project. It will fund several zero emission vehicles for this small local agency's fleet electrification. The request was $300,000. The recommendation is $200,000. This is the Sand City Multi-Use Trail and EV Infrastructure Project. The image on the left shows the future path and its attributes through Sand City. Last cycle, the same project was awarded $205,000. Sand City requested an additional $200,000. Staff recommend $100,000. Sand City also requested an additional $400,000 for construction and associated charging stations. Staff recommend Sand City apply in future cycles for construction and charging station funds. This City of Monterey project includes battery charging stations for much of that municipality's fleet at their courtyard. The request was $200,000. Staff recommend $200,000. This San Benito project was a request for $200,000 for a battery charging station at two different locations and an electrification strategy plan. Since strategy plans don't provide direct reductions in air pollution, it's ineligible. For the charging stations, staff recommend funding and administering the project through the Community Air Protection Program. Through CAP, the applicant may receive an award that will increase, and the CAP program is specially for such projects in low-income areas. This City of Hollister project is for a charging station in two different locations that'll be open to the public. Staff recommend $100,000. The request was $200,000. This is the Salinas Valley Recycles project. It includes six charging stations that'll be open to the public at the 126 Sun Street site. Staff recommend funding this project through the Community Air Protection Program again. The maximum award this applicant may receive will increase, and the program especially for such projects in disadvantaged areas. Here you can see the number of light duty incentives this cycle for Monterey County. The table shows the name of the agencies and the nonprofits that staff recommend to receive an incentive and the number of incentives. Here's the same for Santa Cruz County. Here's the same for San Benito County. Light duty means about 10,000 GVWR or less. Normally you'll see about smaller trucks, smaller vans, but most light duty passenger sedans would be included. With the F-150, I would say some models might be considered a light duty, but there's a chance that you might be able to get an F-150 with a GVWR over 10,000. There are models that are on the line like that.
So These projects, they're not on the this list?
Yes, they are. They have a description as LD replacement or expansion. And they're all either $20,000 or they're all $20,000.
I'm sorry. Are these projects offered to the community service districts specifically?
These projects are for public agencies and nonprofits.
The light they were, duty they were sent out to these agencies.
If they're a public agency, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the trucking or the trucks that we have at the Paro Sunny Mesa, the service trucks that we have at the Paro Sunny Mesa Community Service District are all probably medium duty. You think that we received the offers? Before I jump on somebody, I'm a director on that community service district.
I'd like the opportunity to just check our outreach records with your specific operation and follow up later.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Perfect.
I have one more slide if you don't mind, I'll continue. Here are statistics on the electric vehicle incentive program. This program incentivizes residents in the Tri-County area to purchase or lease a clean vehicle. As of October 1st, we have 78 applications, and we're about 25% of the way through the year with 26% of our total funds committed. Thank you. More questions?
Questions?
Well, yes, I had. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you mentioned it. I didn't catch it if you did, but do funds from the previous year roll over that are I would imagine you don't have a lot of funds remaining at the end of the year, but it's at least in the two biggest counties that do funds roll over if they're not used?
Funds don't roll over. We exhaust the funds every cycle with, you know, projects and programs like EVIP, but there are projects that do not succeed where we have to reallocate funds. Currently, there aren't any funds floating around for reallocation right now.
Having been there also, there's certain, when you're requesting funds from grants and the different things, there's a certain amount of gamesmanship. If you only need 100,000, you ask for 200,000, so you'll get 100,000 and won't be cut to 50,000. Mm-hmm. Is that going on here, or do you have specific criteria for cutting the amount requested by the various jurisdictions?
We have eligible costs. We're trying to provide direct reductions in air pollution for motor vehicles. So for example, an electrification strategy plan was considered ineligible. But we have a request to get a detailed invoice. So that helps us look at a project's eligible costs with respect to its tasks. So we don't just get a blanket task and a blanket request for money. We have an invoice with respect to tasks.
So if a county came back to you and said, how come you cut us in half on your recommendation? You can give them a point by point rationale for why you did that.
Norm, please.
Yeah, typically it's the other way around. We try to leverage as much as possible. So if we have a lot of projects or oversubscription, we then look at the projects and say, well, how can we divide this up better? And we'll call typically the project applicant and say, look, we know you want 200,000, but can you make it work with one? Yeah. And typically they'll say, yes, we can. Sometimes they say, no, we can't. And then we'll work with them on that. But we have such an oversubscription to the program that, you know, we try to stretch the dollars as far as they'll go and get as many projects funded. So, you know, we're a little bit reluctant just to give the first go around full funding unless it's really meritorious or it actually has really good cost effectiveness.
And that's a logical criteria that you would put there at the top of the.
Other questions?
Yeah, a couple.
Okay.
I have two questions. On the UC Santa Cruz bus, is that an electric bus?
Yes.
You might highlight that in your future presentation.
All of the replacements are electric in this program.
Just reduction, it's zero. Okay.
Good. Yes, sir.
The other one was the city of Salinas, the recycling center. You're putting in six chargers.
Yes.
How much of a percentage of the time do you think that there'll actually be six in use? I'm thinking there may not be enough cars to, or, you know, either staff or visitors to tie up six of them. I'd almost rather see them put in your parking lot where there's a line.
A lot of our proposals for projects when we get applications include evaluations on the electric needs of each operation. So from what I remember about the Salinas Valley project, that allows their operation to charge their vehicles overnight so that they can have fully charged vehicles to work every day. And it's their operational need that kind of guides their asks. If we don't see a good reason for their asks, that's something that's concerning to us.
Okay, so it's for their vehicles, not for visitors.
Yes.
Thank you.
Did I understand correctly that San Bernardino County got a larger allocation than its population?
Yes.
And could you explain again why?
For the past several years, San Bernardino County has had zero or a few small projects. They've left funds on the table. Those funds have brought benefits to communities in Monterey and Santa Cruz County. And now, because we have so much applications, so much funding requested from San Bernardino County, we're now in a good place to bring some balance and to provide them with a few bit more.
Other questions? Are there recommendations for the board on this item? If not, I think we recommend what you have proposed.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next item is the update on air toxics.
Good afternoon. I'm Amy Climo. I'm the engineering compliance manager here. And each year we provide an update on our air toxics program. And so I just wanted to start out with, well, what am I actually talking about when I say air toxics? And so at the federal level, the United States Environmental Protection Agency calls these hazardous air pollutants, or HAPs, and they're listed in the Federal Clean Air Act. And these are compounds that are particularly hazardous to health. And then at the state level, they're called toxic air contaminants, or TACs. And that's an air pollutant that the California Air Resources Board has decided will cause or contribute to an increase in health, human health risk. And so this started back in 1987. There was a bill. We call this AB 2588. It's the Hotspots Information and Assessment Act. And so the reason I'm here today is that the Health and Safety Code requires us to provide an annual report to the board. And so the goals of this act were to calculate emissions from facilities from these toxic compounds, identify the facilities that may have local impacts, determine the health risks, and then at where required, notify nearby individuals. So this is just a high-level overview of the steps that we go through here at MBARD when we're looking at a facility in the hotspots program. And I do want to point out that every single permit that is issued here from the Air District individually is looked at for risk. We have a Rule 1000 that requires us to do that. And what's different about this Air Toxics Hotspots program is it takes a look at an entire facility and all of those permits at that facility and asks what's the risk from that. So that's how it's a little bit different. And so in these steps, the red line indicates we follow established procedures to evaluate the emissions at a facility and then assess the risk. And there's different categories. There's low, intermediate, or high risk. And I'll talk about that in a little more detail in a minute. But intermediate and low risk facilities kind of fall out at that red line and they don't have to go on further. But any facility that's found to have high risk kind of goes on into further steps. And so this table shows what we use is a method that's called a prioritization score. And this is based on a methodology that was established by the California Air Resources Board and the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association. And so we're able to take that data in those emission inventories for the toxics and prioritize the risk and come up with these scores to determine which category a facility may fall into. And so we have found with most of the facilities that we've reviewed, they fall into the low or intermediate categories. But there are a few handful that fall into the high category. And we look at acute and chronic effects. And so an acute effect is something that hits you really quickly, like within 1 hour. Chronic is over many years. And then cancer is also over many years. And each toxic compound that we review has an established acute, chronic, and or cancer risk from the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. So we use their data to figure out which category these toxics fall into. So if a facility has a high score, they have to do something which is called a health risk assessment. And that goes into a detailed modeling of the risks for that facility. And then we have to provide that health risk assessment to the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment to review. And if that HRA, as we call it, exceeds the thresholds in this table, then that's when that public notification gets triggered. So this year we reviewed 9 of the facilities that were intermediate and were required every 4 years to take a look at those facilities that are intermediate and make sure there hasn't been any kind of significant increase in throughput, emissions, or process activity. And in those facilities we reviewed, there was no significant increase identified, so they're remaining intermediate facilities. And these facilities are now also reporting their toxics emissions annually to the state because the state adopted a regulation that now requires certain facilities to annually report toxics emissions. So our future activities is we're going to complete remaining aggregate, military, and smaller gas stations. And then we're also going to start 2 industry-wide sources, auto body shops and non-vehicular diesel engines. The California Air Resources Board and the California Air Pollution Control Officer Association have just recently issued guidance documents for how to do those assessments. So we'll move forward with those. We're going to postpone the remaining smaller wastewater treatment plants. They're put into the last category of reporting to the state for toxics emissions to 2028. And that's because there's a lot of studies being done right now on PFAS. And I'm sorry, I can't remember what the full call out of that is. And so as they're waiting for that data to be all researched and reviewed and to come up with those toxics factors. So we'll wait on those till that time. And then our main person who was doing our toxics program left the district this year. And so we are going to look for additional program support in 2025 so we can really keep this program going. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Currently, it looked like from the chart you have 3 high risk facilities that have been identified and a number of in progress. Do you anticipate many of the in progresses to, or what percentage of the in progress do you anticipate might be in the high risk?
Probably not very many. So what we found so far with the high ones that's driving the risk is that they have older diesel engines. The diesel particulate matter is a cancer risk. And so we're finding those facilities that are ending up with high risk is because of those. They're called tier 0 or tier 1. That's the emissions rating. And in a lot of cases, it's hospitals or wastewater treatment plants because they tend to need to have like 1,000 horsepower, like large diesel engines. So if the power goes out at the hospital, that they have to have that full load available right away. So that's what we're finding. It's those larger diesel engines.
So overall, our region is in good shape. It seems like looking at this compared to others, is that a correct statement?
I think so. It really also depends on the location. So again, with hospitals, they tend to be in neighborhoods where there are receptors like residences. And so it also, the location actually really matters a lot when you're looking at a risk assessment. So hospitals and sometimes gas stations can be near residences. So that's where there's sometimes some conflict. Yep.
I have a question. So what is required is public notification, right?
Yes.
And there are no mitigation measures required?
So if you have to do public notification and then you do a five-year risk reduction plan.
Oh. Okay.
If you end up falling into that category.
Okay.
Yes. And so it would probably end up being they'd have to change out their engine. If it was a large diesel engine, they'd have 5 years to come up with the funding and get a plan in place to get a newer engine.
Yes. Other questions? Thank you for your report. Rich?
You'll have a copy of this report in front of you. I'll just go through it really quickly. Our previous board meetings in August, we had a public hearing and adopted our resolution approving revisions to Rule 218, which are Title V operating permits. This committee had already seen that and commented on that and recommended approval to the board. And then the board authorized me to implement the zero emission school bus program using $2 million of our AB 923 funds. So that program is off and running. With respect to district business, thank you for those that attended our 50th anniversary. I think it was a pretty successful event. I want to thank Siri for helping coordinate that and plan it. It was really remarkable. Hopefully we'll have another 50 years. And while I'm in the announcements, I just wanted to let you guys know that we just appointed our old counsel as a hearing board member, Les Gerard, but we still are in need of hearing board members, particularly with the health professional background in engineering. So if you know of anybody, they direct them towards our website and there's a way they can apply to be on that board, because it's really important for us to have that properly staffed with board members. Engineering in compliance, this is just sort of a repeat of our revisions to 218 that was approved by the board ultimately in August. And then speaking of the hearing board on June 3, UC Santa Cruz is one of our best customers for the hearing board. They're always doing work and changing out stuff out there, so they have to do a plan to deviate from their permits. And typically we'll approve that. And then we also had a really recalcitrant person that was not paying their bills for over a couple of years. Operating a gas station out in Marina. We had to take the unusual action of referring this to our hearing board for an abatement order, first time it's ever happened in this district. And the guy sort of blew that off too. He ended up going into bankruptcy, and we ended up hiring an attorney to prosecute the case. Technically, he was liable for millions of dollars in fines and penalties. You know, a violation of the hearing abatement order is about $25,000 a day. And he was into that for several months. And then operating without the permit over 2 years, you know, it's about $10,000 a day for each violation. So in the end, our attorney that we hired was able to get a stipulated judgment. And he agreed to it. And so we're getting recovering costs. We're not getting anywhere near the millions he could have owed, but we're pretty happy to cover all of our costs and get some fines and penalties for the effort. So hopefully we won't have any more problems with the new operator at that facility. We haven't received any odor complaints from Marina residents since the April board meeting. I don't know if that's changed. We're sort of into that. A weather pattern now. Turning over the page, I just remarked here that we ended our spare the air wood heating season notification system, but of course fire season has begun. We've been pretty lucky this summer and haven't had significant impacts to our air quality from fires in California, although we had one of the largest fires in the country a couple of months back up in Northern California. But the wind seemed to blow it everywhere except for down coast. And then our wood stove changeout program is burning right along. We've got about 130, we've awarded 134,000 towards incentives for purchase of new, more efficient EPA wood stoves. And most of them have been in the San Lorenzo Valley. We're really well practiced out there with giving incentives. And we also received an additional amount. I think we've got about, we had about 600,000 and maybe even more now, because we were able to gobble up some monies that Ventura County Air Pollution Control District was unable to spend. So that program lives on. There's nothing in the governor's budget that will allow us to continue operation the following year, but we'll see if we can cobble together some funds. And then we just provided a couple of buses, zero emission. And on that slide, Bob, it does, it has a big thing, electric vehicle on the UC Santa Cruz slide. So yeah, we're seeing a lot more buses that are becoming available. There was a pretty significant wait during COVID for supplies. So now we're seeing them get on track. And then our LEAP program, that's the Landscaping Equipment Exchange Program, thanks to Eli, that's, we've awarded about 36,000 for residential customers and 81,000 for commercial customers. And these are incentives to replace gas-powered landscape equipment. Also, we're moving forward to work with Morgan State University and NASA on a three-year project involving pollutant data collected by our sensor network. So they'll try to true up what they're seeing from space with what results on the ground, specifically our data is showing. So we're really excited to be participating in this evolution of new sensor technology and get our name out there as well. And then just note there, there's been over 600 acres of prescribed burning in jurisdictions since the start. June 2024 until June 18th. And then also good news, EPA Reach 9 has allocated $662,000 for the IRA section grants and $20,000 for another part of the grant. And specifically the $662,000 will be going towards equipment purchase such as ozone analyzers, nitrogen dioxide analyzer, PM2.5 and PM10 monitors. And hopefully we're going to be getting an electric Ford F-150 Lightning truck as well. $442,000 for air monitoring data server and transition to a cloud-based system and annual service agreements. Hopefully right now when our Windows computers update, we get crashes. So it's very inefficient and takes a lot of time to resolve. We'll have additional parts of $65,000 for air monitoring supplies, parts, and backup. We'll also get another $27,000 for equipment maintenance and annual equipment recertifications. And then another big chunk of $242,000 for air monitoring salary and fringe benefits. So that's a pretty healthy grant. And as I said, it's our network. And so Sean is right now working on finalizing the touches to the grant. So we hope to be able to get that finalized with the EPA in short order. That concludes all my information. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
So a number of years ago, you approached the San Lorenzo Board of Realtors to get the cooperation to have the homeowners, as they sell their houses, to agree to put their I'm wondering, the years have passed, the value of your home in San Lorenzo has skyrocketed, whether or not you could take another shot at going in that direction. Because I think that the wood stove incentives is terrific. It's going to take a lifetime at this rate to really get them all changed down. If you can do it with their cooperation, I think that that would be a more effective result.
One would think that, and I thought that when we put a lot of effort into that. There's only one other air district that I'm aware of that has a similar program, and they're telling me that that would never get approved today. But when we did propose that, we got the local, state, and national realtors associations threatening to sue the air district. And they see it as, number one, sort of an unfunded mandate. We don't have reliable and consistent funding for that project. So it's not like we're charging any fees to people who have existing stoves. So we don't really have money coming in like water districts. You know, they get money for utilities and so forth. We don't have that avenue where we could carve off money to put in a replacement program. The other thing is they felt that it was an additional paperwork burden for the realtors, and they felt that that was not something that we'd be able to recoup their time and effort through. So we also saw that happen in the Bay Area. And so at that point, we let it go. We still, last night at an advisory council meeting for Central Coast Community Energy, I recommended that they talk to a realtor association about this very issue, because they actually have a pretty reliable funding stream to replace heating devices with more efficient ones, namely, you know, these mini split heat pumps. Thank you. They're very reliable, and they can also cool the air, which is becoming increasingly more apparent, which I can tell you from personal experience, and I bet Janet, it's been pretty warm these past couple nights in the valley. They don't work really well in super cold environments, but they would probably work pretty well in many of our areas.
I just had one installed.
I need to get one so I can get some sleep. Yes.
Fabulous.
Yes.
It replaced my furnace. It, you know, it costs $12,000, but given the future price of natural gas, I think it will ultimately pay for itself.
Yeah, and we it's probably too late now, but we do have an incentive that may have been able to help a little bit. Our incentive amounts don't really cover the true costs associated with the more expensive, and the same is true for Central Coast Community Energy. They're only offering up to $1,500, and that's not really going to do it for a really decent system. But yeah, that's something we'll keep in our back pocket. And if you know of anybody that would like to, from a real estate association that would like to champion that, I would love to develop a rule to allow us to do that. I'm just a little bit squeamish too, because, you know, every year we seem to not have enough funding available, and then miraculously we'll dig some up, but it's not a consistent funding, and the governor doesn't have any money for wood stove changeouts in the budget this next year. The past couple of years he's had $5 million and now is zero, so we've been cobbling together whatever funds we can.
I have a couple of recommendations. Scott Storm at couple meetings ago raised the issue of how heavy batteries are for heavy duty electric vehicles. Are there any presentations on efforts to make batteries lighter?
That is the main goal of battery technology right now, because the main focus of it's energy density, and especially on school buses, most of the energy goes to transporting the batteries, not the children or the occupants. So they are trying to make it lighter. I also, to that end, I've looked up the issue with battery powered tractors and compaction of soil, and I have not found anything. So that sort of makes sense, but you know, even fuel-driven tractors are pretty heavy, especially if they have a full tank. It's about 8 pounds per gallon. If they have a significant gallon, that's a lot of weight. It's probably more efficient than a battery, but it's still pretty heavy. So not sure that's a biggest issue out there.
I just received notification that the Bay Area Air Quality Management District is taking the lead on developing a regional climate action plan. I think a presentation from the Bay Area on their effort would be worthwhile for the committee.
I can look into seeing if they're willing to come down and do that. I would say that there's probably nobody that knows what's going on up there right now with that. I'm not sure how they cobbled that together, but it's probably going to be subject to lawsuits from CARB. They're not going to probably like some of the aspects of their program just because it's going to probably get in the way of what CARB's trying to do. But yeah, I can talk to CARB and, or to Bay Area and see if they want to give a presentation.
Because what's happening locally here is, you know, the efforts that by the city and the county, cities and the county to do caps is kind of not too dynamic. Put it nicely.
I would say also just, you know, and I don't want to say this as, but we're not a big hitter when it comes to emissions of greenhouse gases. In fact, if you look at the sustainable community strategy that has to be implemented over at AMBAG, they didn't even have any targets for emission reductions because they think we're just basically not worth doing that. And to be honest, if we got rid of all of our sources of CO2, it really wouldn't change anything. That's not a good reason not to do it, but they're just thinking we're not a big player. Bay Area is a big player. South Coast is a big player. And San Joaquin, those are really huge players. So I'm sort of surprised by that announcement. They've got a lot of money. And that was through the same grant, the IRA, that we received for our air monitoring. I don't think we would have been successful with a similar type of planning grant here. But we can look to them, and I'll see if they can come down and give us a, and it would be helpful to staff here too, just to see what they're trying to accomplish with that.
Okay, thank you. Any other suggestions?
I had a question, if you're, unless somebody else wants to go before me.
What?
I had another question. Oh, okay. Just out of curiosity, given that the purchase of these school buses with the funds that we're talking about is more of an incentive type thing, because I don't think you can take a long time to replace all the buses in all the school districts. Have you tracked information about what percentage of electrified buses they have in their fleets at this present time or as you go, to see if it's working, to see if they're being incentivized and they're experience with electric buses is good enough and the savings good enough for them to want to purchase electric vehicles even if they don't get incentivized by the district?
So that's a great question. We do have access to all that data that shows who has what. With respect to how successful buses have been, the answer is always is it depends. We do know that we have mountain school districts that are trying to get rid of their electric buses because they do not work. If they have to travel up hills or high mountains, they can't get to where they need to go because they're, once again, transporting, even if there are no kids on board, they're transporting the batteries. So we have seen some air districts actually relocate some of those buses to flatlanders. You know, we're waiting for the technology to get better. We sunk a lot into clean diesel, and I know right now schools have $0 to be able to fund, you know, even a portion of the school bus. So most of our funding has been for 100% of the bus costs. So, but we don't have many buses out there. I'm going to take a guess and say there are fewer than 10 electric buses in school districts. So, and there's probably over 100 diesel buses. So we have a long ways to go, but I think like everything, technology needs to still catch up. And yeah. If they can make lighter batteries.
I would just like to return to the cap issue. You know, if all of our local jurisdictions did their housing element, that in essence, because it requires housing to be built adjacent and within cities, so that reduces greenhouse gas emissions. So the cap and the housing element go kind of hand in hand in the county. And while it may not be significant on a worldwide basis, it's significant in terms of the county addressing its housing issues. So thanks.
Well, actually, yeah. So I would agree, but and this is what I say, this is why I helped get Community Energy started, is that it's not about their whole charter is to do greenhouse gases, but if we can reduce emissions from school buses and other diesel powered, it's actually direct public health benefit. So they're ignoring that, and that to me is a selling point, that if we can reduce transportation, as you know, is our largest contributor to greenhouse gases. And if we can, and to air pollution in general, NOx and other smog and toxics. So if we could reduce that, we, even if you don't care about the greenhouse gas issue, which most people maybe care too much, the
not after North Carolina.
Yeah, and then the last few days. But most of the issues for us are you can reduce other pollutants in addition to greenhouse gases. And I think that's a more compelling story, especially for school children. But yeah, I agree, but planners would all have to agree. And that's a difficult ask.
Okay, any other comments from committee members? So if not, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you. And thank you for having a quorum.
Good night. Peters don't agree.